So what are you hearing? What's going on? It's early, but you know what? There's a lot of teams on the ice. Their rookies are going. I know that our here in Calgary, we're keeping a close eye on what's happening in Penticton. We're going to talk to Brad Treliving coming up. But anything noteworthy since we spoke to you last?
Well, you know, the PTOs are starting to be interesting. Like, you know, Daniel Paille to Chicago. You know, Jiří Tolusti was a guy who I was waiting to see where he'd land, but he might go to the KHL instead of taking one here. You're kind of wondering, you know, if who's going to end up where, and, you know, if some of these guys are going to get a chance to make teams. And that's kind of what you're looking at right now. I'm not expecting, like, any major moves to happen. I mean, we could always be surprised, but this is a point where guys say, well, you know, I want to see what my kids look like, or I want to see what my team looks like. So I'm, you know, I don't know if anything you expect anything big to happen at this particular point in time.
I don't know that I've ever been around a team when a guy on a tryout makes a team. Or is that going to change?
I don't know. That's a tough one, Rhett. Like, I could see some of those guys in, like, Toronto who've got, you know, Glenn Cross there. They've got Brad Boys there. I could see them signing a couple of those guys, because what that comes down to is, you know, Toronto is trying to shake things up. There's no question about that. They're trying to show their players that it's not going to be comfortable. And also, they don't want any of their kids to make the team. They want all their kids to be in the American Hockey League. And the other thing, too, is I can see a situation where the Leafs are kind of sitting there and saying, you know what, if one of these PTO guys makes the team and they play well, we can trade them and maybe get some draft picks later in the year. So I could see a situation in Toronto where some of those guys make the team. Like, you know, I was looking at Chicago's situation. You know, they still trade. They make the trade last week with Versteeg. They sign. They sign Kruger and end that. But, you know, the way it's looking at, they might have about $300,000 of cap room with only 21 guys on the roster. Now, Quenneville likes to carry 22. I'm not sure he's going to be able to. But, like, that's a situation where I think it's going to be, it's very hard to see that guy making the team. But I could see in Toronto where, you know what, they don't want any of their kids to be at the NHL level. Them, I could see making the team.
I want to ask you about Colorado. Last year, obviously, a disappointment for them. They're not going to be firing the coach, and they're not going to be firing the general manager, and they have a lot of young talent. But do we expect them to be considerably better? Is this a lookout for Colorado, big rebound year? Because they have the youth, and then they've got the Tangays and the Ginlas at the other end. Just your thoughts on what's to expect from the Avalanche.
Well, I think with them, you know, they really were worried about their defense. They didn't like it. They tried to change it. Like, I think, you know, I heard, and it's tough to get a handle on things that Colorado is up to, but I heard they were looking for defensemen in the off season, and they, you know, they signed, they just traded for Brandon Gormley. They signed Francois Beauchemin. I just don't know if they're still good enough on the blue line. I think they're hoping that some of their kids can make a bit of a difference there.
What about Nikita Zadorov that comes over in the O'Reilly trade?
Well, Zadorov's an interesting player. Like, Buffalo had a lot of problems with him. Like, the Sabres believe that Zadorov was going to be an impact player, but they had some real issues with him last year. Some of it was weight. Some of it was, you know, just maturity. You know, he missed a plane at one particular point and got into some trouble. I think Zadorov will be a good player, but I think he's got to get his head screwed on a bit more straight, one. And two, you know what, he's still only 20. Like, I don't know how much you're depending on a 20-year-old defenseman to make that kind of a difference. I don't think they're as good as they were 2 years ago. I don't think they're as bad as they were last year. I think it's going to be very interesting to see, do they sign Eric Johnson or do they let him walk? You know, Colorado's a team that, you know, they always try to keep, you know, salaries down a bit. They get guys to take a little bit of discounts to stay there. You know, can they get Eric Johnson signed? Because, as we know now, good defensemen, they don't hit the market. So is Eric Johnson going to be able to hit the market, or is Colorado going to take care of him? I think that's going to be an interesting question, because if they lose him and they've already got blue line questions, how are they going to solve that?
And they don't have much left in the in the way of deals. They're already now they're paying Matt Duchene his $6 million. Basically, they're paying they're paying Landeskog his $6 million. They're paying Jerome $5.3 million per year. They they trade and pick up Soderberg. He's making just under $5 million. The only guy is, I guess, Nathan MacKinnon, and he's going to get paid at the end of this year.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if they do bridge or they go long term with him. Like, I do know that a couple of years ago when they lost Paul Stastny, that one of the reasons they lost him was because they knew that they were going to have to pay MacKinnon, and they didn't want anybody making too much more than they expected he would make. So when the number, you know, hit $7 million, which is what St. Louis gave him, they were like, nah, we're going to let you go. So I think they've kind of had an internal cap looking at what MacKinnon's going to make. That's why I'm very curious to see what happens with Eric Johnson. You know, I think the other thing that you might just see, start to see in the next little while is, you know, Pat Brisson, the agent for Anza Kopitar, he's going to Switzerland this week. He's going to go see Austin Matthews as his client. Matthews is going to play, is obviously playing over there. And I think when he gets back, or maybe they've started already, I don't know, it's tough to tell, I think you'll see the Kings and Kopitar really try to hammer something out.
It's not the only guy they've got to sign, too. Milan Lucic, who they gave up quite a bounty to get, first-rounder and Martin Jones, he's up at the end of the year. What are your expectations for him? He hasn't looked himself for the last couple of years, in my mind.
Well, he didn't. There's no question about that. And that's one of the reasons, Ryan, that Boston made the trade. You know, Lucic, they had some preliminary conversations, and, you know, Lucic asked for 8 years. I don't know what the number was. I don't even know if they got...
Are you yawning? You're yawning. Are you yawning?
Yeah, it's Monday morning. What do you want from me? I was up late last night working on my blog. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
You know, Lucic asked for 8 years. Boston, I think they only wanted to go about five. I don't even know if numbers were eventually exchanged. And they just said, you know what, we'll make the move. I would think, you know, last year was a weird year for me for Lucic because, you know, he was very much the emotional heartbeat of the Bruins. As his emotions went, they kind of went. And I thought he was kind of flat. Like, there were nights where I thought, okay, he's going to, like, especially games against Montreal, where I thought, okay, he's going to be the emotional leader of the Bruins tonight. And it just didn't go anywhere. He's one of those guys, and I think the Kings are one of those teams, now that they've finally got some time to rest, because they played a lot of hockey, what's going to be there? Like, for example, one of the things I understand, Drew Doughty said last week when he was in Toronto, you know, he lives in London in the offseason, and Jake Muzzin, I think Muzzin's a Toronto guy, but Muzzin lived at Doughty's place in London, and they skated together for a while. Just, you know, because they play defense together, and they didn't like the year last year, and they skated together. So I think that whole Kings team, and Lucic being a part of them, that's going to be lookout Western Conference. I mean, those guys are going to be something this year.
Elliot Friedman, our NHL insider. I wanted to ask you about the it's not even pending, but the ownership situation in Pittsburgh. You brought it to the forefront, and we mentioned that a year ago. They're still looking to sell it. Is this impacting the team in any way, shape, or form? I don't imagine that it is, but what's the latest with Mario and company looking to get out?
Well, I just think they're having trouble getting the number they want to get. Like, you've heard the reports that they're asking $750. You know, I don't know if they're going to get it. You know, one of the big questions about the Penguins is, how much money does that organization actually make? You know, you would look at them and say, boy, that's an organization that makes a ton of money because they have great players and they sell out for a long time, so their revenue must be huge. Well, they're one of those teams, I understand, where their revenue isn't as large as, you know, you think it is. I had one guy who, actually, there was a story last week, and I asked one guy about it, where it said that the Penguins only, you know, their revenue is only about, not revenue, but their plus on their balance sheet's only about $15 million a year. And everything's relative. People are like, only about? Well, you know, that's not a lot compared to some of the teams that make the most money in the NHL. the Maple Leafs, the Canadiens, and the Rangers of the world. And that's why I think people wonder, how much is this team really worth? And, you know, I understand them trying to swing for the fences and hit a big number, but, you know, I've been told people looking at it are kind of saying, that team is not worth as much as you think it is. And that surprises me. Like, you know, I really am surprised to hear that. I figure they're a revenue powerhouse, but, you know, some people who know better than me, you know, say that's not true. Now, if it's wrong, I'm sure the Penguins will have something to say about it, and their ownership will send their hitman after everybody who will disagree. But that's, you know, that's something that I've heard is the case. They don't make as much money as we all would think.
Yeah, but are sports franchises based on – they aren't based on strictly revenue. I mean, I was involved in the Saskatoon Blades deal a little bit. And you're not paying a financial formula for it. I mean, it's whatever some guy with too much money wants to pay, right?
No. I agree with that. Like, you know, right? Like, I think there's two ways it kind of happens. Like, and number one is, you know, does somebody just want it as a vanity project? Yes. If some guy walks in and says, you know what, I really want to own the Pittsburgh Penguins and I want to own a hockey team, you're right. Like, he's the guy who's, or she's the person who's going to pay that kind of money for a team. But I think, you know, there's people who do it for business reasons. Like, is it a real estate play, for example? Like, we've seen situations before where people have bought teams because they like the real estate that's around it, or they think they can build. Like, for example, a team like the Coyotes was exactly that. Why did they move out of downtown Phoenix and into where they are? It's because the people who had the team at that time were building the mall and wanted to make the money that way. So not everything is a vanity project. Sometimes it's part of a real estate play, and they look at it and they say, it's got to make business sense. Now, the thing that's really interesting to me is, you know, the league is going to do expansion, and the number is going to be between 5 and 550. That's what they said at the opening press conference. Now, if an expansion team is between 5 and 550, I could see somebody there saying, well, the Penguins got to be worth 750 then. Like, so I understand the logic, but it doesn't sound like Rhett. Like, I could be proven wrong today. Somebody could walk in and say, you know what, I've got to have the Pittsburgh Penguins, but I don't know if there's a vanity play here. Like, I figured if there was, we might have heard that by now.
What are you hearing on the Carolina Hurricanes? Because that was a team name that popped up, about a month ago when some talk around expansion turned to, well, maybe it's a relocation. And they've been seeking an ownership, maybe not an entire sale, but someone to come on as a minority investor. Hey, come spend your money and have no say.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, I think it's very hard for people to go into a situation. It's like, you know, John McMullen, who is the former owner of the Devils and was very successful. He had a famous line, because he also had a piece of the New York Yankees. And he had a famous line that there's nothing more limited than being a limited partner of George Steinbrenner. And I do think that's an issue in Carolina, in the sense that Peter Karmanos wants you to put a lot of income on the say. I mean, the thing we know, right, if the commissioner wants it to. You know, he's very loyal to markets. You know, I don't think that team, like, I think it's going to be a tough year in Carolina. Like, they're doing the right thing, but it's hard. They're rebuilding. They're turning the team over to their kids. Every year, you know, there's a team where people send out photos and they say, well, look at the crowd in this building tonight. Like, I think Carolina's probably going to have a few days like that this year. I think they're going to be better than they were last year. I think they're 100% doing the right thing. They have to do it. But in those kinds of markets, it's painful, and you're going to see people poking fun at their attendance and saying, what does this mean about the future? I don't ever really pay attention to the rumors, like, because people say it about Florida, they say it about Phoenix, they say it about Carolina, and Phoenix is a bit of a different case. But you know the commissioner, he is dedicated to these markets. And I don't think that the Hurricanes are anywhere near as bad as the situation, like, for example, that they have to fight in Arizona. And I don't believe they're anywhere near close to moving yet.
What does it mean for Eric Staal? He's due a new contract this summer and is already making $8.25 million.
Well, the last I heard about this is that they're not close. So I think that's going to be interesting. Like, I personally believe, Ryan, that Eric Staal would benefit from a change. I think it would rejuvenate his career. You know, the thing is, you know, and he has a great setup there. He's, you know, obviously he loves Carolina. The organization loves Eric Staal. His family's there. He's got a beautiful home there. He's very comfortable. You know, all I can do is compare it to, you know, myself. And the time I really remember it was when I was at the Score for 6.5 years, and then I went to Hockey Night in Canada, and you kind of have to prove yourself all over again. And I didn't realize at the time how comfortable I was at the Score. Like, they would ask me to do things like, why don't you host some news shows? And I was like, nah, I like reporting. And I didn't realize, like, how comfortable I'd gotten and how much it rejuvenated me to do something new. I kind of look at that with Eric Staal. Like, you know, it's been a tough couple of years. He's been hurt. The team hasn't been great. I think he would really benefit from a change of scenery. Now, I don't think anybody's going to come out and say that, but I did. The only thing I've heard is that they're not really that close in negotiations, and we'll see where that takes us. I mean, the one thing he has is he has control. He's got a no-move clause, just like Cam Ward does, and Carolina can't do anything without, you know, his approval. So I wonder, depending on how this goes, you know, I just hear they're not close, and I wonder if at some point down the way the decision is made, okay, do we sign him or do we let it play out and see where this goes?
Thanks as always, Elliot. We'll talk to you again on Friday. Have a great week.
All right, guys. Have a great week. And I won't be doing my blog Thursday night, Dean, so I probably won't be yawning, okay?
Perfect. Well, I mean, if there's anything that can put you to sleep, it's this show.
It's a radio interview in Calgary.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.